Okay. You're not going to believe this. What came across my desk is just ridiculous. What do the old Bigelow Ranch, black budget projects, exotic reverse engineered UAP technology, the CIA, other intelligence organizations, drug smuggling, and weapons armament smuggling have in common? To just call it wild doesn't seem like enough. What if reverse engineered exotic technologies are being used in illegal ways by intelligence programs and black budget projects? How would anyone know? If this sounds too far-fetched for you, buckle up for a drug-induced frenzy of UAP conspiracy involving the CIA, other intelligence operations, smuggling drugs and other contraband in reverse-engineered UAP technology.
Come blast off in my time machine. Third eye feeling like an Evazine. Blast off, blast off, blast off, blast off. Come blast off in my time machine. Third eye feeling like an Evazine. Blast off, blast off, blast off, blast off.
Blast off on a drug-induced frenzy of UAP conspiracy. A wild episode of the Hyper Anomalous Esoteric Research Organization podcast, aka Hero Paranormal. Broadcasting from the base at La Madre Mountain, just south of Area 51. My name is Ryan, the Anomalous Ambassador of the Airwaves, bringing you an unbelievable episode today. Okay, so let's break it down. A drug-induced frenzy of UAP, UFO conspiracy. Involving the CIA, other intelligence operations, smuggling drugs and other contraband in reverse-engineered UAP technology. Sounds too crazy, right? Well, that's what I thought when I was approached by an eyewitness and resident of the Uinta Basin who claimed they had witnessed UAP, UFO-style exotic technologies, land on the old Bigelow Ranch, load and unload things before taking off again. This happened over and over again. When I asked what their gut reaction and feeling about it was, they said, "You're never going to believe me, but I think they were moving drugs." They were right. I didn't believe them. This sounded like the most far-fetched theory I had ever heard about. And I've heard a lot of far-fetched theories in the area. Keep in mind, this is a resident, a local, and someone with a direct view of the property at all times. So let's get back to this crazy belief that over and over again, they believed they had witnessed UAP, UFO-style exotic technologies landing on the property, loading and unloading things before taking off again. And they had the gut reaction and feeling that something was being moved, possibly something clandestine. This aspect seemed like it may be out of a wild Hollywood movie to me. But, as is usually the case, when there is smoke, there is fire. This particular eyewitness has been astoundingly accurate to the point that I believe just about anything they say, which makes this unique information that much harder to wrap my mind around. Could it be? I laughed it off at the time, but the eyewitness account has haunted me. Whenever black budget programs, intelligence, UAPs, and high echelon top secret projects converge, I have found just about anything is possible, especially given the most recent information sent to me this week. PR Newswire, a historic press event on UAP UFO disclosure in Washington, D.C. Dr. Stephen M. Greer, founder of the Disclosure Project and one of the world's leading authorities on the UFO-UAP issue, will be presenting definitive evidence of illegal, unacknowledged black budget projects related to UFO-UAP operations in Washington, D.C. This will take place at 2 p.m. on June 12, 2023 at the National Press Club. He will be joined by several top secret government whistleblowers who will be presenting compelling testimony. These whistleblowers include a U.S. Marine who witnessed a man-made UAP offloading illegal weapons and drugs in Indonesia in 2009. So yeah, you got that right. This person is willing to testify that they were smuggling drugs and guns in Indonesia in 2009 in reverse engineered exotic technology. I mean, if you're going to get away with something, why not use a vehicle that is going to get away with something, right? Moving forward. The Disclosure Intelligence UFO Archive, consisting of over 5 terabytes of government documents, whistleblower testimony, and specific locations of illegally operated UFO projects and corporations, will also be unveiled. Over 700 military intelligence and corporate whistleblowers are included in this vast archive. Okay, we are talking about a lot of people here, and I just have to interject. That is a lot of whistleblowers. A lot of people are saying this kind of stuff is taking place, and it might be far-fetched in our view. However, this is very interesting that illegally confiscated and suppressed craft, exotic technology, in other words, are being used for offloading illegal weapons and drugs. Now, this is craft that can move quickly, below the radar, and get jobs done immediately. I mean, this sounds a whole lot like the eyewitness testimony I was told by someone watching UAPs and exotic technologies landing in the Uinta Basin. Whether or not it has any semblance to what was actually going on or not, it just goes to show that it's possible. These things are possible. I'm not saying it's happening, but if we have government whistleblowers who are presenting compelling testimony saying that UAPs are offloading illegal weapons and drugs, I mean, this sounds exactly like the story and eyewitness account I was told. So why would it be that craft which are illegally confiscated and suppressed from the mainstream are used in black budget projects by intelligence agencies to get otherwise clandestine operations off the ground? Well, I think that's pretty obvious. We're talking about propulsion systems and advanced energy that can move at rates that none of our law enforcement vehicles could even wrap their minds around. And I'm not saying it even has to be drugs or guns. It could be anything. These corporations and black budget projects, which are to be unveiled, could be moving anything. They could be illegally operating things that, well, 5 terabytes of government documents are going to tell us what it is. However, just the testimony and specific locations of the suspected illegally operated UFO projects makes one wonder. I mean, have any of you seen the movie Air America with Tom Cruise? Isn't this exactly what they were doing, but utilizing airplanes? Let's speak seriously and candidly about things like Iran-Contra, the Iran-Contra scandal, moving guns. I was born in Costa Rica, which is the country beside Nicaragua to the south, so it wasn't a shocker to me. And this story was something that many were aware of, but nobody was talking about. The reality, however, is that as time has passed, it has become more and more obvious that the crack epidemic, cocaine in general, and the sales of these drugs were somehow funneled into purchasing weapons for guns and ammunition that was then sent to the Contras in Nicaragua. This was all done behind a smokescreen of government lies which have only recently seen the light of day. So when I hear that Dr. Stephen Greer plans for a civilian-initiated RICO, Racketeering Influence Corrupt Organization lawsuit against illegal military and corporate projects will be announced and outlined. Then no, I'm not that shocked. I mean, it's been done before. These things have happened before. This is a long-standing way of doing business for some of these intelligence organizations. Is it a shocker? I don't know, but there's more to it. Additionally, some of the 119 crash retrieval events of extraterrestrial vehicles will be summarized and presented. The Disclosure Archive contains intelligence on all these cases, a summary of advanced energy and propulsion technologies that have been illegally confiscated and suppressed will be presented. These technologies would replace all fossil fuels, nuclear power, and electric transmission systems, and would create a new economy free of poverty and pollution within a generation. Over the course of the last 30 years, Dr. Greer has identified over 700 high-level government and corporate whistleblowers willing to testify on their direct involvement with the UFO, ET matter, advanced energy and propulsion systems, and the existence of covert government programs that are run illegally. Well, there you have it. That's pretty cut and dried. And that's out of Investors Observer. That is a great publication. I'd also like to thank the source of the Disclosure Project and the PR Newswire via Quote Media. And, you know, this is the kind of stuff that is so far-fetched and hard to believe that there may actually be some truth to it. And as I said, there is historical precedent. And I mean, it's going way back. The book Alternative 3 maintains that there is abundant evidence that by 1951, the superpowers were far more advanced in space technology than they have ever admitted. And in this, it is correct. There is a strong case to be made for UFOs as part of hidden and high echelon government projects utilizing the secrets of flying disc craft. Some claim these were received from the Nazis at the end of World War II, and the timeline certainly fits. In the South Wales Argus for December 13, 1944, Marshal Yarrow of Reuters stated, quote, "The Germans have produced a secret weapon in keeping with the Christmas season. The new device, which is apparently an air defense weapon, resembles the glass balls which adorn Christmas trees. They have been hanging in the air over German territory, sometimes singly, sometimes in clusters. They are colored silver and are apparently transparent." End of quote. These were the famous Foo Fighter craft that our airmen witnessed, engaged with, and came back and reported on. These were out-of-this-world technology at the time. A confidential Italian document obtained from the OSS from an informer in Switzerland stated that during the latter part of the war, informers had observed an encounter between an unknown craft and Allied planes, a strange flying machine, hemispherical, or at any rate circular in shape. It attacked them at fantastic speed, destroying them in a few seconds without using any guns. Another verification of early saucer technology was received by researcher Thomas Adams, although the author, known to Mr. Adams, chose to remain anonymous in the published account. And I quote, "I was privileged once to get in on the observance of a real, genuine, solid, tangible UFO model under construction, where I was once an employee at Goodyear Aerospace Corporation, now Goodyear Atomic, in Akron. For 3 years, back in the mid-60s, I had blue, secret, clearance, then, And the individual who showed me the UFO in a special hangar there had red top secret clearance. At that time, I was not allowed to disclose what I had seen due to the fact that I was an employee. We were taken under the threat of a federal fine or imprisonment if we talked about matters secret or top secret. Of course, now it no longer applies. We run into this over and over again with whistleblowers and testimonials of people who have witnessed this exotic technology. Eventually, the NDAs do run out, and they are able to provide some sort of view of some of the experiences they have and things they have seen in hangars at top secret facilities. This information comes from the book Mind Control and UFOs by Jim Keith. But information on black budget projects related to the UFO and UAP operations in this country, as well as other countries, have authorities a little bit worried. Disclosure Intelligence UFO Archive, consisting of over 5 terabytes of government documents, are quite the threat to the establishment. And I can totally relate to why some of these things are used instead of regular airplanes. I can understand why utilizing exotic craft will definitely put fear in the eye of the observer who happens to witness such accounts. They are far less likely to call law enforcement and say, "Hey, I saw a flying saucer or a triangle UFO," than they are, "Hey, I saw a low-flying airplane," right? Moving forward, UFOs and aliens among us. This is from the Library of Congress, and with good reason. In the 1940s and 50s, reports of flying saucers became an American cultural phenomenon. Sightings of strange objects in the sky became the raw materials for Hollywood to present visions of potential threats. Posters for films like Earth vs. the Flying Saucers from 1956 illustrate these fears. Connected to ongoing ideas about life on the moon, the canals on Mars, and ideas about Martian civilizations, flying saucers have come to represent the hopes and fears of the modern world. It's best to use fear against those who have it, securing the possibility of a black budget project without witnesses being willing to come forward and discuss what it is they saw. The best defense is an aerial fear. Fear of ridicule, fear of the objects themselves, and fear that if you do mention it, it won't take long for people to not take you seriously. Much like the boy who cried wolf, a lot of the eyewitness accounts of both cryptozoological entities like the wolves in the Uinta Basin, as well as UAP extraterrestrial technologies viewed in the skies, most, I would argue, are not reported. And the following information comes from the Federation of Scientists, because there is a role that the CIA has played in the study of UFOs. An extraordinary 95% of all Americans have at least heard or read something about UFOs, and 57% believe they are real. That's the majority. Former U.S. presidents Carter and Reagan claim to have seen them. Ufologists, UFO buffs, and private UFO organizations are found throughout the United States. Many are convinced that the U.S. government, and particularly the CIA, are engaged in a massive conspiracy and cover-up of the issue. There's good reason why UFO researchers and organizations suspect the CIA. Documents show that CIA operatives infiltrated UFO organizations years ago. The Air Force Office of Special Investigations, for a period, spread disinformation about UFO cases and sent operatives to UFO conferences, get-togethers, and meetings to gather intelligence. The idea that the CIA has secretly concealed its research into UFOs has been a major theme for UFO buffs since the modern UFO phenomena emerged in the late 40s. In late 1993, after being pressured by ufologists for the release of additional CIA information on UFOs, James Woolsey ordered another review of all agency files on UFOs and its attempts to conceal CIA involvement in the entire UFO issue. What emerges from this examination is that while agency concern over UFOs was substantial until the early 1950s, why is that? Well, the emergence in 1947 of the Cold War confrontation between the United States and Soviet Union saw the first wave of UFO sightings, the first report of flying saucers over the United States, and the Technical Intelligence Division of Air Materiel Command, AMC, at Wright Field, later Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Daytona, Ohio, assumed control of Project Sign and began its work on January 23, 1948. Although at first fearful that the objects might be Soviet secret weapons, the Air Force soon concluded that UFOs were real. Nevertheless, the report recommended continued military intelligence control over the investigation of all sightings and did not rule out the possibility of extraterrestrial phenomena. That was never ruled out, and I wonder why. With increased Cold War tensions, the Korean War, and continued UFO sightings, the Director of Intelligence, Major General Charles P. Cabell, ordered a new UFO project in 1952. Project Blue Book became the major Air Force effort to study the UFO phenomena throughout the 50s and 60s. The task of identifying and explaining UFOs continued to fall on the Air Materiel Command at Wright-Patterson. It always comes back to Wright-Patterson. The CIA closely monitored the Air Force effort, aware of the mounting number of sightings and increasingly concerned that UFOs might pose a potential security threat. Agency officials accepted the Air Force's conclusions about UFO reports, although they concluded that since there is a remote possibility that they may be interplanetary aircraft, it is necessary to investigate. Deputy Director for Intelligence, Robert Amory Jr., assigned responsibility for the UFO investigations to OSI's Physics and Electronics Division, with A. Ray Gordon as the officer in charge. Each branch in the division was to contribute to the investigation, and Gordon was to coordinate closely with ATIC. Amory, who was asked to focus on the national security implications of UFOs, was relating DCI Walter Bedell Smith's concerns. Smith wanted to know whether or not the Air Force investigation of flying saucers was sufficiently objective, and how much more money and manpower would be necessary to determine the cause of the small percentage of unexplained flying saucers. Smith believed there was only one chance in 10,000 that the phenomena posed a threat to the security of the country. But even that chance could not be taken. According to Smith, it was the CIA's responsibility, by statute, to coordinate the intelligence effort required to solve the problem. Smith also wanted to know what could be made of UFO phenomena in connection with U.S. psychological warfare efforts. So here they basically say they want to know how they can utilize this in U.S. psychological warfare efforts. Psychological warfare is the expertise of the CIA, and this is the way to really use people's fear against them. It's all about the psyops, the psychological operations, especially given the most recent information sent to me this week. These exotic technologies are used in ways that exponentially benefit the black budget projects they are used in. According to the Defense Technical Information Center, PSYOPs provide combatant commanders with a force enhancement capability across the full military operational spectrum, and that includes surveillance. Now, I mentioned OSI, and Richard Doty is one of the most controversial figures in the OSI. Doty admits he fed disinformation to Paul Benowitz and other UFO researchers. He forged documents, and he made things appear differently than they really were. I really like Richard Doty. I appreciate his honesty, especially now, and the fact that he has explained why he did what he did and how it was necessary at the time. Why would this take place? Why would he say that aliens were landing in U.S. areas or territories? There's a reason, and that is the psychological operation. This was his job. This was information that he was told to disseminate, or misinformation he was told to disseminate. He worked as a police officer, he worked as a subject matter expert, and he worked for the Office of Special Investigations. He is a disinformation agent, and that was his job. So I don't see anything wrong with him doing what he did. Justifiably, he was protecting secrets, military secrets for that matter, of the United States. However, he was, in a bigger way, saying that UFOs were a very real extraterrestrial presence. Now, what he has done since makes things even more interesting, but we'll get into that another time. Because, unfortunately, many UFO researchers have long suspected that they're under some kind of government surveillance. Is it true? It seems that part of it is. As many know, I was being surveilled by members of a security team involved with a black budget Pentagon program, and they were surveilling me for good reason. They were wondering, who is this guy? Why is he interested in this? What is he doing? And only through friendships acquired years and years later have I found out that, you know, I'm now friends with the people who were actually surveilling me at the time. And they said, yeah, we were keeping an eye on you. Yeah, we would post up outside your house in black Suburbans. And yes, we were monitoring your comings and goings. And I now understand that. It makes sense to me. It makes perfect sense. And UFO organizations have been infiltrated by the CIA, the Office of Special Investigations, and other intelligence organizations. And for good reason. There may be a call to disseminate information or disinformation for various reasons, and it may have to do with psychological operations. PSYOPs work, and the CIA is, well, the best at doing psychological operations. If you've never read the book, The Big White Lie, which is an account of the CIA and the cocaine crack epidemic, I highly recommend it. The author contends that his account is based on real incidents, conversations, and events reconstructed from tapes, personal diaries, court transcripts, and interviews. His principal arguments are that the CIA has perverted the American criminal justice system by protecting drug dealers and murderers from prosecution. He contends that federal judges and prosecutors allegedly broke narcotics laws which have protected them from investigation. He also contends that the government of Bolivia and South American drug cartel leaders have been assisted and even paid by the CIA. Finally, the author maintains that without CIA support, South American cartels and the epidemic of cocaine and crack use in the United States would have never occurred. Now, the Institute for Policy Studies has an interesting bit of information written by William Bloom, which was originally in the Foreign Policy in Focus. So let's get to it. And the belief and contention that the CIA, Contras, gangs, and crack are all connected. This was based on a year-long investigation where reporter Gary Webb wrote that during the 1980s, the CIA helped finance its covert war against Nicaragua's leftist government through sales of cut-rate cocaine to South and Central LA, utilizing the very famous drug dealer Ricky Ross. In August 1996, the San Jose Mercury News initiated an extended series of articles linking the CIA's Contra Army to the crack cocaine epidemic in Los Angeles. Based on a year-long investigation, reporter Gary Webb wrote that during the 1980s, the CIA helped finance its covert war against Nicaragua's leftist government through sales of cocaine to mostly South Central LA. They utilized Rick Ross, aka Ricky Ross, and they unleashed a storm. I mean, if you're willing to use street-level drug dealers, why wouldn't you be willing to use educated astrophysicists or propulsion rocket engineers who are involved with exotic forms of propulsion of reverse-engineered craft, right? Let's get back to Rick Ross for a moment. While much of the CIA Contra drug story had been revealed years ago in the press and in congressional hearings, the Mercury News added a crucial missing link. It followed the cocaine trail to Ross and black LA gangs who became street-level distributors of crack, a cheap and powerful form of cocaine. The CIA's drug network, wrote Webb, opening the first pipeline between Colombia's cocaine cartels and black neighborhoods of Los Angeles, a city known as the crack capital of the world. Black gangs used their profits to buy automatic weapons, sometimes from one of the CIA-linked drug dealers. Many in the media have also postulated that any drug trafficking Contras involved were rogue elements, not supported by the CIA, but those denials overlook much of the evidence which purports CIA involvement. For example, CIA supplied Contra planes and pilots carrying cocaine from Central America to U.S. airports and military bases. In 1985, Drug Enforcement Administration agent Celerino Castillo reported to his superiors that cocaine was being stored at the CIA's Contra supply warehouse at Yaponago Air Force Base in El Salvador for shipment to the U.S. The DEA did nothing, and Castillo was gradually forced out of the agency. Another example, when Danilo Blandón was finally arrested in 1986, he admitted to drug crimes that would have sent others away for life. The Justice Department, however, freed Blandón after only 28 months behind bars, and then hired him as a full-time DEA informant, paying him more than $166,000 a year. When Blandón testified in a 1996 trial against Ricky Ross, the Justice Department blocked any inquiry about Blandón's connection to the CIA. Yet another example. Although Norwin Meneses is listed in DEA computers as a major international drug smuggler implicated in 45 separate federal investigations since 1974, he lived conspicuously in California until 1989. And was never arrested in the United States. Yet one final amazing element of evidence is that Senate investigators and agents from four organizations all complained that their Contra drug investigations were hampered by the CIA or an unnamed national security interest. In the 1984 Frogman case, for example, the U.S. attorney in San Francisco returned $36,800 seized from a Nicaraguan drug dealer after two Contra leaders sent letters to the court arguing that the cash was intended for the Contras. Federal prosecutors ordered the letter and other case evidence sealed for national security reasons. When Senate investigators later asked the Justice Department to explain this unusual turn of events, they ran into a wall of secrecy. So there is a history of CIA involvement in drug trafficking. A gentleman named Dennis Dale, former chief of an elite DEA enforcement unit, writes, "In my 30-year history in the Drug Enforcement Administration and related agencies, the major targets of my investigations almost invariably turned out to be working for the CIA." As I mentioned before, I was born in Costa Rica, and a lot of these situations are more well known when you're actually involved with the culture or from a country that is used as a banana republic for intelligence organizations, and you understand the inner workings and how these things tend to be applied. In Costa Rica, which served as the southern front for the Contras, there were several CIA Contra networks involved in drug trafficking. In addition to those servicing the Meneses, Blandon operation, and Noriega's operation, there was CIA operative John Hull, whose farms along Costa Rica's border with Nicaragua were the main staging area for the Contras. Hull and other CIA-connected Contra supporters and pilots teamed up with George Morales, a major Miami-based Colombian drug trafficker who later admitted to giving $3 million in cash and several planes to Contra leaders. In 1989, after the Costa Rican government indicted Hull for drug trafficking, a DEA hired plane clandestinely and illegally flew the CIA operative to Miami via Haiti. The U.S. repeatedly thwarted Costa Rican efforts to extradite Hull to Costa Rica to stand trial. Another Costa Rican-based drug ring involved a group of Cuban Americans whom the CIA had hired as military trainers for the Contras. Many had long been involved with the CIA and drug trafficking. They used Contra planes and a Costa Rican-based shrimp company, which laundered money for the CIA, to channel cocaine into the United States. Costa Rica was not the only route. Guatemala, whose military intelligence service closely associated with the CIA, harbored many drug traffickers. This is according to the DEA. Additionally, the Medellin's cartel Miami accountant Ramon Milliam Rodriguez testified that he funneled nearly $10 million to Nicaraguan Contras through longtime CIA operative Felix Rodriguez, who was based at Ilopango Air Force Base in El Salvador. The list goes on, and there are so many countries to list that I could just run myself ragged listing them, but I'm going to go into Afghanistan. It's important, especially given the fact that we left $85 billion worth of valuable military equipment for free there. I mean, there's a reason mothers were throwing their babies to the soldiers in the United States Army, because anyone who had helped the U.S. government at that point was on a kill list. Back to the drugs. The CIA supported Mujahideen rebels engaged heavily in drug trafficking while fighting the Soviet-supported government, which had plans to reform Afghan society. The agency's principal client was Gulbuddin Hekmatyar, one of the leading drug lords and the biggest heroin refiner, who was also the largest recipient of CIA military support. CIA supplied trucks and mules that had carried arms into Afghanistan, which were used to transport opium to laboratories along the Afghan-Pakistan border. The output provided up to one half of the heroin used annually in the United States and three quarters of that used in Western Europe. U.S. officials admitted in 1990 that they had failed to investigate or take action against the drug operation because of a desire not to offend the Pakistani and Afghan allies. In 1993, an official of the DEA dubbed Afghanistan the new Colombia of the drug world. There's a reason we were over there. Drugs and the CIA go way back, and being born in Costa Rica and being very familiar with the Nicaraguan aspects of this and the Panamanian aspects of this, I've seen this. I've gone with uncles and I've seen the cigarette boats shooting up the rivers, and for more than a decade, Panamanian strongman Manuel Noriega was a highly paid CIA asset and collaborator. Despite knowledge by the United States drug authorities as early as 1971 that the general was heavily involved in drug trafficking and money laundering, Noriega facilitated guns for drugs, flights for the Contras, providing protection and pilots, safe havens for drug cartel officials, and discreet banking facilities. United States officials, including then CIA Director William Webster and several DEA officers, sent Noriega letters of praise for efforts to thwart drug trafficking, albeit only against competitors of his Medellin cartel patrons. The U.S. government only turned against Noriega, invading Panama in December 1989 and kidnapping the general once they discovered he was providing intelligence and services to the Cubans and Sandinistas. Ironically, drug trafficking through Panama increased after the U.S. invasion. I'm telling you, it really has. In Costa Rica, if you're looking for a new big screen TV, if you're looking for a new Apple computer, a MacBook Pro, whatever the case may be, the easiest way to get one is to drive down to the Panama River and wait for the cigarette boats to come up with illegal contraband. This contraband is usually stolen, pirated, whatever, off of ships coming from somewhere else, and these suppliers sell it at a huge discount. It's illegal, yet it isn't, because it depends on what side of the river you're on. No one pays taxes on the river. And I can't even explain how real this stuff is. I've seen it done. I've literally seen it done. And the CIA's involvement in trafficking arms, money, and disinformation is why they're so good at the PSYOP. Nobody can touch them. They are the best, the very best there is. And one of my very favorite examples of what took place is in Haiti. Because, as many know, Haiti has been the battleground for a lot of strange conspiracy theories, including theories revolving around the Clinton Foundation. But while working to keep a key Haitian military and political leader in power, the CIA turned a blind eye to their clients' drug trafficking. In 1986, the agency added some more names to the payroll by creating a new Haitian organization, the National Intelligence Service, SIN, SIN for short. SIN's mandate included countering the cocaine trade through SIN officers themselves who were engaged in trafficking, a trade aided and abetted by many of the Haitian military and political leaders. Everybody gets a piece of the action if they play ball. So what can we say about the CIA and exotic propulsion, the possibility of using reverse-engineered extraterrestrial technology if it exists, and this historic press event on UAP UFO disclosure in Washington, D.C.? Well, we'll see what it's going to be all about on the 12th. I do have a feeling he's trying to preempt any bombs from Gary Nolan, James Fox, and or Jeremy Corbell, to name a few. And I do know some of the whistleblowers, although I will not name them here. We have one from Antarctica, the South Pole, who worked down there. He will be coming forward with some information. Another one who claims to have loaded drugs into an ARV or UAP-type vehicle in 2009 in Indonesia, and a few others which are going to blow some minds. How and why would these individuals be willing to testify in Washington, D.C. if there wasn't something to their story? I don't know. Maybe there's more to this that I am missing, but it could have something to do with preempting any truth bombs from James Fox, Gary Nolan, and Jeremy Corbell, as well as George Knapp and the Weaponized podcast. A lot has been coming out of a lot of different arenas that is dealing with similar disclosure. I also plan on having that eyewitness who claims to have seen UAP land in the Uinta Basin and believes that things were being smuggled in or out or loaded onto and out of these ARV or UAP vehicles. They're in the center of paranormal activity in the Uinta Basin. I plan on having that eyewitness on the podcast. It's just a matter of getting them scheduled, and it will be a doozy of an episode, so keep an eye out for that. I guess we're going to have to wait and find out what pans out and comes out on June 12th. Really quick before then, if you haven't subscribed to Hero Paranormal, please head on over to Hero Paranormal on YouTube. Like and subscribe. Please share the podcast. I am probably never going to be monetized on YouTube for a variety of reasons. So liking, sharing, and subscribing to the podcast is one way for people to hear it, and it definitely helps me out. Also, if you want to access all of the content behind the paywall, you can do so for just $5 a month. That's the price of a cup of coffee. It gets you the whole enchilada, and you get all of the content behind the paywall, and there is a ton of it. You can access that through Patreon. Just search for Hero Paranormal or go to heroparanormal.com. Until next time, keep your eyes to the skies, feet on the ground, but don't forget to take a look around.
Come blast off in my time machine. Third eye feeling like an Evazine. Blast off, blast off, blast off, blast off. Come blast off in my time machine. Third eye feeling like an Evazine. Blast off, blast off, blast off, blast off. Hey, money,